Johann Strauss composed the Blue Danube Waltz when the Habsburgs ruled Austria. The composition captured the genteel sensibilities of Middle Europa. Today, modern Austria celebrates the glorious cultural tradition of its writers, composers, and artists. But Austrians have a complex, even tortured relationship with their history. NPR's Guy Raz continues our week-long look at life along the River Danube with this report from Austria.
Werner Steinmetz was getting sick of hearing the same old river music of his beloved Johann Strauss. So Steinmetz, who's a member of the Johann Strauss Ensemble in Linz, got a few of the best musicians together and summoned the soul of Johann Strauss. And if Strauss were alive today, Werner Steinmetz reckons he'd sound something like this.
The idea behind was to think about Johann Strauss and his music and what will I do now, 100 years later. And I remembered the famous pizzicato polka from Johann and Joseph Strauss.
Now, if you're trying to summon the soul of Johann Strauss, and you want to be really authentic, you've got to do what he did, stare at the Danube. So Manfred Kammerhofer, another member of the Strauss Ensemble, is fortunate to have an office overlooking the river. He calls his composition Sound Scenes.
Danube is more than the river. I can see the flow of the music in the river.
People in Linz say their city is the only real Danube city. Vienna, they like to point out, sits on a Danube canal, not the river itself. They're proud of their great legacy, the people who passed through and stayed, Bruckner, Strauss, Mozart, even Wagner. The one person no one's eager to talk about is Hitler. He spent his childhood here and developed an obsession for Wagner at the Linz Opera House. It's just 12 miles upstream from Mauthausen concentration campsite, and the only concentration camp on the River Danube.
We're now in Upper Austria, in Mauthausen. This is the biggest concentration camp in Austria. Austria was occupied in March 1938. And a few months later, this concentration camp was built on the 8th of August.
A tour guide explains that Mauthausen wasn't the most notorious camp, but half of the people who walked through its gates died inside. The social order and atrocity were bound together at places like this, writes historian Claudio Magris. Prisoners called these stone steps the Stairs of Death. At the bottom was a rock quarry. Inmates were forced to carry stones heavier than their emaciated bodies up the steps. The rocks were deposited onto a small river barge, which took them 12 miles upstream to Linz. There they were used to construct Nazi administrative centers. Manuel Garcia is a survivor of Mauthausen. He was a committed anti-fascist who fought against Franco in his native Spain. His wrinkled skin is now covered in liver spots. His lower lip hangs off his jaw. It was here, from the steps of death, where Garcia could watch life flow by along the river.
From inside, you could see a small stretch of the Danube. But you have to know that it was horrible in here. And the only thing we thought about was death. That's what we were waiting for.
The Austrian stretch of the Danube is one of the windiest along the river's entire course. The twists and turns of the river somehow mirror the ups and downs of Austrian history. The river brought art and music, but also atrocity and war. On the morning of July 14, 1683, 200,000 Ottoman Turkish soldiers crossed the Danube on horseback and laid siege to the Austrian capital of Vienna. Today, the horse-drawn carriage drivers who offer tourists rides through Vienna are likely to be Turkish immigrants. Vienna has the second biggest Turkish population in Europe. Today, Turkish immigrants are the city's street sweepers and day laborers. After a 400-year absence from the city, Austria's government invited Turks back as guest workers in the 1980s.
Wir befinden uns derzeit in Hernassagürtel. Das ist der Verkehrs.
We are now standing at the Nassagürtel, which is full of traffic. The noise around here keeps the rent low, and this is why you've got mostly Turkish immigrants living here.
Niyazi Oz runs the Turkish-German Friendship Society. His office is located in this rundown, working-class Vienna neighborhood where the coffee is served thick and sweet. Niyazi Oz explains that second- and third-generation Turks, native Austrians, complain that they're not regarded as real Austrians.
Das ist ein Phänomen der mitteleuropäischen Länder.
This is a phenomenon of the Middle European countries to stay together, to view foreigners with suspicion, and to keep them on the periphery of the traditional professions. But we're used to it. We live with this phenomenon.
But Viennese social scientist Mikhail Mitterauer says it's a phenomenon linked to Vienna's consciousness.
Vienna has a tradition, a very anti-Turkish tradition. Since 300 years or more, there's a myth the Turks are the enemy in the East.
At Vienna City Museum, school children wander through exhibits on the battle for Vienna. Mikhail Mitterauer, who studies Austria's national school curriculum, says 1683 is still very much a part of the Austrian national mythology.
For the Austrian identity, this year 1683 is so important. Children in the first class, 6-7 year old children, learn about where King Jan Sobieski came over the Wienerwald, where Kara Mustafa has his headquarter, which way Turks attacked Schottenbastei. The whole city of Vienna is full of historic places with Turk memory.
And that memory can be found in any of the city's 300 coffee houses, or even in the music of Wolfgang Amadeus Mozart. He wrote the famous Turkish Rondo on the 100th anniversary of the Ottoman siege of Vienna. Guy Raz, NPR News, in Upper Austria.
There's more about our series on the Danube River on our website, npr.org.